Yes, friend, you can be successful with wholesale without exhibiting at trade shows. This is a question that I frequently hear from our Paper Camp students, and today's guest is a shining example of how slow, intentional growth without trade shows can still lead to wholesale success. Today's guest is Paper Camp alum and advisory board member Katie Hart of Odd Daughter Paper Co. Katie launched Odd Daughter in 2013 as a side hustle. The brand evolved into a thriving product brand whose revenue primarily comes from wholesale, and her products are sold in stores throughout the world. This was such an inspiring conversation that I decided to break it up into two parts. On today's episode, which is part one, Katie shares how Odd Daughter got started, the intentional decisions that she's made along the way to make her business growth more sustainable, and we talk about her decision to exhibit at her first wholesale trade show this year in 2023, after 10 years of successfully scaling her wholesale program. Now, in episode 305, which will air next week, we will talk about how Katie's sister Michelle works full-time in the business and the unique benefits that that brings. We'll also talk about boundaries in business and how Katie navigates that, so check back next week for that conversation. Today's episode is brought to you by our free on-demand wholesale audio series. You can get instant on-demand access at proofedproduct.com/privatepod. In this audio series, I'll walk you through the biggest mistakes and most common questions that folks have when they are starting and scaling wholesale. I really don't want you to make the same mistakes that myself and others before you have made. So we're going to dish all the dirt so you don't make those same mistakes. You can binge this audio series in less than an hour, and you can listen on the go in your favorite podcast player. No fluff, just concrete action steps and answers to help you simplify and strengthen your wholesale sales and marketing. So get access at proofedproduct.com/privatepod.
I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. I'm on a mission to empower product-based business owners to confidently grow their revenue in their own way and at their own pace. Here at Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies, find inspiration, and action steps to help you start, streamline, and scale your product-based business. So grab your favorite notebook to take notes, and let's get started.
Katie, welcome to Proof to Product.
Thank you. This is so exciting.
I'm so happy to chat with you. I mean, you and I talk fairly frequently because you're one of our advisory board members, but having you on the show to share your story with our audience, which is you have such a beautiful story, and I'm really excited from everything from starting wholesale to having your sister join the business and doing your first trade show after 10 years. Like, there's just so much fun stuff that we're going to talk about. So thank you for taking the time to chat with me today.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So let's kick this off. For those that are not familiar with you, tell us about your business, Odd Daughter Paper Co. What do you make and who are your products for?
Yeah, absolutely. So our bread and butter is definitely our greeting cards. And we also do stickers, art prints. And then we have a deck of cards that has prompts for managing and dealing with anxiety and stress. It's called the support deck. That was created with my friend Vanessa, who's a therapist. And that has been a really cool product just because it's a little bit outside of the norm. But yeah, basically just stationery products in general.
But your support deck has been one of your bestsellers, I want to mention. Absolutely, for our yes. listeners to hear. And the reason I point this out is because oftentimes when we talk about expanding into new product categories, I talk about you probably need 3 or 4 SKUs for that product category. Mm-hmm. But something like a deck of cards like this mental health deck, or even a planner, like some of those can be one-off pieces and they can still be very successful within everything else you're selling, which is what you've experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we definitely have retailers that just buy the support deck. Those are some of like our more like wellness centered retailers, like maybe a spa or therapy offices, but we actually did come out with the support deck in Spanish. So there is a second SKU in the category, but yeah, it has been great. Like, people buy it alongside cards, or they'll just get that. But I'm glad that I didn't stress over feeling like I needed to have like a bunch of decks to release at one time.
Yeah, for sure. I also have to tell you a quick funny story before we dive into some of this other stuff. I brought your deck home after the advisory board retreat and a couple of my kids were having just a rough day. Like we were overstimulated. There was too much going on. I was anxious. So I pulled a card from the deck and we all laid on the floor and put our legs up on the wall. Like us laying in the hallway. It's myself and two of my kids and my husband walks in the door, the front door. And he's like, what are you guys doing? And we're just like, we're calming our bodies. Thank you.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Legs up the wall is one of my favorites. That's amazing.
Yeah. So you're helping many people with your deck. Fantastic. So thank you for that. All right. So let's talk about your business model. How long have you been selling wholesale? And is that your primary revenue stream?
Yes. Okay. Wholesale is probably about 85% of our revenue at this point. It's been just over 10 years, which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
I started with an Etsy shop, as most of us did.
Yeah.
Still do. And it was actually called Kate's Paper Goods. And I hadn't really thought about the fact that at the time there was a large retailer in New York called Kate's Papery. And I didn't even think about it. But when I decided to actually launch for a wholesale, I rebranded and moved to actually Big Cartel. And now I'm on Shopify.
Okay, cool. And you rebranded when you moved to Big Cartel and off of Etsy or?
Yeah, that was the switch. It was like exactly, or just over 10 years ago. Okay. And that's when I started wholesale.
Awesome. So you started wholesaling straight off the bat, but you were also doing both direct to consumer and retail at the time. Did you know at that time that you wanted wholesale to be the primary revenue stream or were you kind of just going with the flow to see what landed?
Good question. I think I was just going with the flow. I mean, I honestly didn't know what I was doing. I was also doing custom wedding stationery. So that was a big part of my income. I was also working full time. Mm-hmm. So I worked full time for the first 3 or so years. And I was, you know, this is how it goes for most people, is working at night a lot and then shipping orders on my lunch break. I worked at a university. So it was really great. They had like a shipping center on campus. I'd go drop off all my packages and my coworkers and actually my boss was super supportive. So that was really helpful. Then when it finally came to the point where I felt like, okay, our daughter is bringing in enough income and I just really can't do both at the same time anymore. Yeah. My supervisor was amazing and just encouraged me. And so I finally quit full-time work in 2015.
Okay. Did you stay with them part-time or do any other consulting or did you just go full board into the business?
So I went full into the business and that lasted probably about a year. And then I was struggling financially. And I think I just was looking for a little bit of social interaction. So I ended up getting a job with a florist and I worked in this flower shop part-time. And then I would do our daughter stuff, you know, probably like 4 days a week. So yeah, I would say in the past, like 7 or 8 years since I quit full-time work, I have had part-time jobs and I've also done contract work, which I just ended like 3-year contract position at the end of last year. So January 2023 was kind of the first time in quite a while that I was fully, fully focused on our daughter.
I appreciate you sharing this because I think there's a lot of people who want to go full-time in there. I know for me, I can share my own experiences. I had overlap in my business and my day job, very stressful, high-level corporate day job for 4 years. And I had a couple kids in the process. And I remember being so desperate to get out of my day job so that I could focus full-time on the business and full-time on my family. And it wasn't always possible because I had, you know, we had bills, we had things like I had adult responsibilities, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's a misconception in the online world, especially when we look at social media and stuff that like, I have to go full time and I can't have anything else that is part of that. When in actuality, including inside of our Proof to Product community, there's a lot of people that have part-time jobs or do consulting or do freelance work or whatever it is as a side revenue stream so that they can reinvest in the business, which is what I did. I had that overlap for 4 years where all the money I was making in Kelp Designs could go back into the business.
Right.
It could go back into building the website or the product runs we needed or whatever, the trade shows we were doing. And so I appreciate you sharing that it hasn't just been, I left and I've been full-time and it's worked out.
Right.
I think it's important to show that there's a wide range of ways to do this.
I think that that's the case for most people. I think it's not necessarily linear. you feel like, yes, you are going to leave your day job and then it's just going to be full-time, you know, small business life. And maybe it is, and maybe that works for you. But I know personally that having some guaranteed income through contract work was really helpful for me. And then, you know, it got to a point where it was taking away energy from our daughter that I decided it kind of was a breaking point, right?
Yeah.
Said, you know, I really do want to focus in on our daughter and really give it 100%. But yeah, none of it's linear. We're all just trying to figure it out.
And we're trying to make it work. And right. I know too, there's a lot of listeners, so I'm saying this for their benefit, but like there's a lot of listeners right now that are considering going back to a full-time job or even a part-time job or more contract work. And if that's what you need to do, friends, please do that, because only you know what's the best thing for you. And so I don't know, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there, but I think it's important that what you said, Katie, it's not linear, and we always need to make the best choices for us. And to your point too, you got to a position where the finances caught up, but your time was shorter. And that's when you knew, okay, we're going to let go of some of this extra things I'm doing. So
totally. And I think like, I mean, just to give another example from my business of things not necessarily being linear or having to pivot in a big way, was that in 2017, I was struggling with some health stuff. I was having some thyroid issues and it was making it really hard for me to work. Mm-hmm. And I was self-employed at that time, but you know, I didn't have sick pay. I didn't have all those things that would have helped. And so my expenses were going up in terms of trying to see doctors. And then also I wasn't making as much. And that was a pretty significant turning point where I just felt like, can I continue to run our daughter, but I don't want to get full-time work. And I also don't even have the energy for full-time work. So I felt pretty stuck. And that's when my sister, Michelle, who we'll talk about later, because we work together now, she suggested that maybe I live somewhere more affordable. And I was living in San Diego at the time and had, you know, my apartment, but then also a warehouse space. And it was pretty affordable, but at the same time, it was just like, okay, something needs to change. And at that point, I could have, you know, asked my parents to move back in with them or gotten a roommate, or there could have been other ways to save money. But Michelle and I both ended up moving to New Mexico because it's way more affordable. And it was the best decision. Like, I am so grateful, but it was a pretty big decision. Like, it was a big change to leave friends and community, and my parents are in LA. And so moving to New Mexico was a big change, but it really allowed for the breathing room to be there financially, because just rent was so much cheaper. And it really tied in because so much of my inspiration was already like desert, cactus, like those kind of vibes. And so if I'd moved somewhere, you know, maybe in the Midwest, it might not have felt as like connected to the brand, but moving to New Mexico ended up being perfect. So I don't know. I think that's just another example of like things not being linear. And also I think that we so often, well, we don't see the challenges that people are facing. You know, obviously sometimes we'll share and we'll get vulnerable on social media, but oftentimes that's like once we've come to a conclusion or once things are kind of like have pivoted and they're doing a little bit better, then you'll share like, okay, this was really hard.
Or it's just like a tiny sliver of what's going on too.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, obviously we're not going to share everything, but I just think like, I don't want people to feel down on themselves because they're really struggling to make it work, particularly in a more expensive city.
Yeah.
I think it's hard no matter what your situation is, but if you don't have a full-time job or you don't have a partner who has consistent income, it can be really challenging. And and it doesn't have to do with the, like how good your work is. There's just so many factors. And so that was one area where I felt like, okay, I can make this change. And it really has paid off, but I really had to want it. You know, you have like, I could have just said, oh, let's just forget our daughter and I'll just go get a full-time job.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You bring up a lot of really good points about control, things we control versus things we don't control, the number of factors that go into these things. It really got me thinking about, yes, you could have shut down Odd Daughter. You could have borrowed money. You could have moved in with your parents. But like, I also feel like the right solutions end up surfacing at the right times, whether it's coming from a place of, oh man, this is like really painful and hard, or wow, this is an amazing opportunity too. Mm-hmm. It could be the good or the bad side of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Getting a little woo there, but it feels, you're right. You know, one of the things I often get emails about or questions, people asking, can I be successful in wholesale and selling wholesale without exhibiting at trade shows? And I always tell them, yes, absolutely. Trade shows are not a mandatory piece of being successful with wholesale, although they do offer a lot of great benefits. But you are a prime example of someone who was successful with wholesale, and you have not done a ton of shows. You, in fact, just to recap for our listeners, you're celebrating 10 years in business this year. You came to Paper Camp in 2015, so that was like 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then now in 2023, you just exhibited at your first wholesale trade show, which I do want to dive into the logistics of that at some point. But first, I want to talk about the strategies that you leveraged through those first 10 years of business in growing wholesale without trade shows. Like, what do you attribute that success to?
Ooh, good question. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. I think I was realistic about the expense of a trade show. And if I had, you know, maybe if I had saved more money while working full time and had like a decent chunk of change, it would have made more sense, but I didn't. And so I think it was just a kind of off the table for a while. At the time, NSS was the biggest show for stationery. And I knew that getting to New York and building a full booth was going to be not only expensive, but just incredibly challenging.
Yeah.
And I'm so impressed by everybody who has done it and continues to do it, you know, shows of that size. But yeah, I think that that was a big factor. And at the same time, I was gaining wholesale accounts. So a lot of that was, this was pre-fair. So there were, you know, emails to retailers just pitching the line, and also, you know, getting inquiries from retailers as well.
Right.
And it's like almost hard to even remember the time before fair, but I had amassed a good amount of retailers at that point. And I will say that my sister, Michelle, did a lot of work compiling a list of potential retailers to reach out to. So she was kind of working on that and would reach out before she was even an employee.
Oh, good sister. But I will say, from the outside looking in and now having worked with you pretty closely for the last 6 months, you two are very proactive. So I'm not surprised in the least bit that you amassed as many stores as you did before, you know, fair came along, or before you did a trade show, because one, you know who the right store, like you're very particular, and in a particular sounds like it has a negative connotation. What I mean by that is you understand who your audience is and you know which stores are the right fit for you. And you're very intentional about who you want to work with. You're proactive about who you're pitching. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to reactive of them reaching out to you, you also have systems in place and you have just like all the right tools ready to make it easy for them to purchase. And all of those things combined, first off, everyone needs those things, right? Like everyone needs those sales tools and those processes and things. But it's a really great example of like how those foundational pieces can get you very far before you even add on anything like shows or fair or anything like that.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, I mean, doing Paper Camp in 2015 really solidified that I wanted to work towards having a larger, more cohesive line. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will say I'm amazed by the shops that brought my cards into their shops. Like I'm honored that at that stage they took a chance and I mean, they sold stuff obviously because they placed reorders, but I didn't have a large line to begin with. And I was still figuring out print processes because I don't print myself. And so there were a lot of things that were changing and have continued to change over the years. But I think figuring out, you know, learning kind of industry standard stuff that I wasn't aware of, learning all that at Paper Camp then really set me up for success to just like dive into that for the next, you know, however many years before actually doing the first show.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I recently did, I think it was a reel or something. I did something somewhere where I talked about the problem isn't your pitch. was mm-hmm. kind of the hook I was taking with it. And I was saying the problem is likely your product line, your pricing, or even your wholesale sales terms and conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's really great to hear you talk about, yeah, I was figuring these things out as I went, but as that got stronger, my sales also got stronger and my outreach got stronger. Because I think there are a lot of folks that jump from, I want to do wholesale, let me just start pitching people, but they don't have a cohesive line or a large enough line, or it's not priced right, or they don't even have wholesale sales and terms and conditions to share or catalog. And those are critical, again, foundational pieces that everyone needs. So I appreciate you sharing that that was kind of a journey and a stepping stone for you.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and it's still a journey. I am still like, I'm really proud of the line that exists today, but I would like it to be bigger, you know, but these things take time and money. So we're just moving slowly.
And slow growth is how we do it, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so let's talk about your first trade show. You chose Noted, the Greeting mm-hmm. Card Association's Noted show, as your first trade show. That was held in April of 2023. Yes. What made you decide, like, what was your decision-making process for thinking, okay, this is the one we're going to do, and after 10 years, we're going to give this a go?
Right, yeah. I mean, okay, at the beginning of 2023, both my sister Michelle and I were working full-time for Odd Daughter. And so I think for the first time ever, it actually felt feasible to plan for something larger. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the first thing. And then in terms of the specific show, I was drawn to Noted because they make it pretty easy for you. You don't have to build walls. You don't have to construct a full booth. Like, you show up and you just put stuff on the walls.
Yeah.
So that was a huge factor. The location was also a part of the decision. San Francisco is a lot closer to Albuquerque than New York. In hindsight, San Francisco is a pretty expensive city to stay.
Yeah.
So that did add to the expenses, but just in terms of like getting there, it was just easier.
Yeah. Logistics.
So, yeah. Logistics. And I knew lots of people who I'm friends with or who I have followed for a long time were also going to be at Noted. So it just felt like, oh, this will be fun.
Yeah. 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 For sure. What goals did you have like heading into the show? It being your first show, you know that there's like a lot of things that are quantifiable, but also not quantifiable about doing a program like that.
Right. I mean, honestly, it was really tricky. I wasn't sure. I just didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, hopefully we get a good number of sales and also leads or just connections with retailers or connections with other folks who are just at the show. To be honest, I didn't have like any really rigid goals. It was more just like, let's see what happens. We'd love to get sales. And I think a part of it was also just like, I think actually I should say that just completing a show was the goal.
Yeah.
Just doing it, because I knew that it's like, basically when we signed up, it was like, okay, we're going to have to do a bunch of different things to be prepared. We're going to get our first catalog printed. I had never done that. Everything had been digital up until that point. And there just were a number of things that I knew were going to be required to like do well at the show, and those things would all push the business forward. So I think honestly just doing the show was probably the biggest goal, and that, you know, I achieved that.
You that did
successful.
You not only did it, but you thrived through it. Oh, I love that. Okay, was it a good show for you? Like, were you happy with the outcome?
Right. I mean, that's what's so hard to quantify, because I didn't know what to expect. I think I wrote about 5 orders at the show and then got a few more after that were from people who I talked to through follow-up, and actually a couple of them just placed orders right away without me even needing to reach out.
Nice.
I mean, I think I probably expected more, but I didn't know what to expect. So I think that it's helpful to, you know, look back and think about the connections that I made with other makers. That was a big one. There were people who, you know, I have followed for a long time and finally got to meet, and my booth neighbors were so fantastic. Those connections were really great. And then, you know, I did talk to other retailers and folks coming through, but there just weren't quite as many people as I expected. But again, I hadn't done a show before, so.
Well, and that's fair. I mean, we obviously going to a show like that, the goal is to connect with our current accounts. It's to meet new accounts that might work with us in the future. It's to kind of build that relationship with reps and colleagues and all the other things. But I agree, going into your first show, it's always wild and like nerve-wracking, because you know what you're spending to get there, but you have no idea what kind of financial exactly. result will come from it. But also, we know that it's more than just the financial orders right then, even how you talked about how you got orders after the show, there is that it's the long game and that right. follow-up process and nurturing the people you do meet there so that they eventually totally. Become customers.
I think some level of visibility is also good. Like it felt like, okay, I'm a part of this. I'm doing it. I'm here. Yeah. And that felt exciting as well.
Yeah. I felt after my first show, I'm like, okay, I'm legitimate now, which is so silly because again, you do not need to do a trade show to be a legitimate wholesaler. But there was something in my mind, even as a small brand, like I felt like it made me feel like this is real. And mm-hmm. again, that was more of a me mentality thing than right. anything else. But I guess my question, next question would be like, what did you learn about yourself and the business and preparing and exhibiting and doing all the follow-up afterwards?
Oh, I mean, I think the preparation was really helpful in that, you know, I'm looking very closely at the line and thinking about what cards are going to go up on the wall. We can't fit everything. So what becomes a priority? That's just a helpful process ahead of time. And then actually reaching out to retailers to let them know that I was going to be there. And yeah, sending out a mailer, hadn't done that in years. So
yeah,
there were just a bunch of pieces leading up to it that are just helpful in terms of assessing your brand and connecting with retailers. In terms of like after the show, reflection after the show, I think that it was really beneficial to see that I could do it. A big part of why I hadn't done a show was definitely the expense and just like not having that extra cash on hand, but also yeah. the anxiety. I'm just going to be real, making sure everything was working. I don't know. It just felt so overwhelming. I had walked NSS in 2018 and I left feeling like I am not ready for that. I think just because I was there by myself, it just felt like a lot of pressure, but I did it. So I think, yeah, I just want to be honest that I had a lot of anxiety going into it and worrying about all of the details coming together or something going wrong and not being able to figure it out. But I did it. I think it looked good.
It looks great.
Ran smoothly. So yeah, I guess, you know, I don't think that shows are necessary for people to be successful in wholesale. I, at this point, don't even know how helpful one show has been for Odd Daughter. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where doing it consecutively and mm-hmm. showing up more consistently would probably pay off. But I do know that going through the whole process and showing up and doing it and like being the face of the business, all of those things have given me confidence and just shows me that it's possible. So if you're just an anxious little guy like me, you me can do it.
You can do it. There is something to be said too, and not that I want to discourage people, but I do think there is something to be said about doing multiple shows time mm-hmm. over time and building that, the visibility piece and people right. the brand recognition piece. But that's not to say, you know, you can still get a lot out of one show like you were talking about too. But yeah. the anxiety and the like, I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot happening with the product line, with the conversations, with the, you know, just all of it. You want it to go well and there it feels like a lot of pressure. And even though all of it is self-imposed.
Right.
But we want it to do well because we are investing so much of ourselves in that. So.
Well, it's challenging because there's a lot that's outside of your control. You can't control yep. how many buyers come through, if they stop at your booth, if they are, you know, still placing orders. Like there's so many factors that really have nothing to do with you and having a good line. Mm-hmm. The reality is that there were so many people there who had incredible stationery lines and with SF Now gift items. So I think there's a lot to be said for recognizing like, okay, I maybe didn't get as many sales as I wanted, but it's not about my line not being good. It's just, you know, the number of buyers, the specific people who came through that day. And again, I still don't know what will come from it. Like
yeah.
if there were people who saw my cards and didn't stop or whatever, you know, you just don't know what might happen down the line.
So true. So true. Do you think you'll do more shows or do you think you'll use that time, money, energy on something else?
Fantastic question, Katie. I'm not sure yet. Gosh. Yeah, I haven't made a decision yet. I think that there is a lot to be said for showing up consistently. And also, I know that it does take up money and time that can be spent elsewhere. So I think, yeah, I still need to kind of dig into that and see what makes the most sense for us. But yeah,
completely fair.
The reality is you can be successful either way.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate Katie coming on to share her story of how she built her own path to success, specifically with her wholesale side of the business. She skipped trade shows, she worked outside jobs, and she was just very intentional in her business decisions. And I think these are really great reminders for all of us. Katie will be back next week on episode 305, where we will continue the conversation about how her sister Michelle works full-time in the business now and the unique benefits that that brings to them individually as well as to the business. We also talk about having boundaries and how Katie navigates that, because I know it's a topic that many of us struggle with. So be sure to subscribe to Proof to Product on your favorite podcast player so that you don't miss it. That one's going to be episode 305. And if you are wanting to grow your wholesale line, I want you to head to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp and join our wait list. The 42nd round of Papercamp will be enrolling soon, and those on the wait list will get first access to tickets. We do sell out every time. I'm not just like blowing smoke here. We sell out every time, and most of our tickets are sold in that first window of access that only goes out to the wait list. Also, don't let the name of the program fool you. Papercamp is for any and all product brands who want to scale their wholesale revenue and streamline sales and marketing systems for wholesale. You know, we started this program in 2011. My roots are in the stationery world. At that time, I had my own product brand that I was growing. I ran that business for over 8 years, and the name Papercamp just kind of stuck with us. But we have worked with thousands of brands all over the world. They sell home decor, food and beverage, apparel, toys, craft kits, stationery, and office products. And all of their products are carried in big box stores and independent boutiques all over the place. So again, don't let the name fool you there. But we only run this program twice a year, and it includes live coaching, on-demand coursework, and access to industry experts. So you can learn more and join that waitlist at prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Thank you for hanging out with us till the end here. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with part 2 of our interview with Katie Hart of Odd Daughter.